In the wake of their visit to the den, Bryce and Hunt contemplate how to find hard evidence of Sabine's involvement in Danica's death. Both are faced with feelings of loneliness, which ultimately leads to their evening rendezvous in the night garden, where they are attacked by the Cristallos demon. The difficulties don't end there when Sabine confronts the pair. The truth Sabine reveals about Danica's actions before her death leaves Bryce reeling and spurs her into action to seek answers about who Danica's true murderer might be from an old acquaintance.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
This is part one of this week's episode. Stick around for part two, which releases on Thursday.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we are exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series.
This is Jack.
And I'm Amy.
This week, we're discussing chapters 44 through 51 in House of Earth and Blood.
The question we're asking ourselves this week is, how aware is the reader of the foundational components of the series plot SJM is building in these chapters?
Themes we'll see this week include sexual tension and loneliness. As a note, this is our first episode recording after having read House of Flame and Shadow.
So be prepared, as much as we're going to avoid talking about House of Flame and Shadow spoilers in the course of the episode.
Yep.
There will be spoilers in the breadcrumbs, and there will be spoilers when we answer today's question.
Yep. So we will flag them, but you've been warned.
Yes. Please take this warning seriously.
And if you want to get our initial thoughts and feedback on House of Flame and Shadow, then go listen to the episode where we did a recap.
You can find that episode published on February 5th.
You can tell which one of us was more affected by that book and which one was okay and survived.
It's between episodes 4 and 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of us had a huge hangover that they're still coping with. Others have moved on.
I've moved on.
I know. We weren't supposed to reveal, Amy.
I'm sorry. This is going to be one of those episodes.
Where you throw me under the bus constantly? I have a headache. You can't make me laugh.
I'm sorry.
Don't be funny today.
I'm sorry.
It is feast or famine with food as power in this novel. And I'm so excited we get to start off this episode with a feast of food as power related content. Our first example takes place in chapter 44, where we're starting today's episode. Hunt and Bryce are eating cereal. Hunt has had 3 bowls and Bryce can't even bother to eat it. What is happening right now is Bryce has just found out that Sabine may have killed her daughter. There seems to be evidence about it. She's just interacted with Sabine, and Hunt and Bryce have discovered her in a lie that basically to them confirms that Sabine is the killer. Just the simple interaction of choosing to not eat or to eat cereal right now is reflecting their current state of mind. Hunt, who is eating cereal, he's focused, he's ready, gonna make a plan, find a way to catch Sabine, and prove she's the murderer. He's motivated by lots of reasons, including his deal with Micah. We're gonna see Bryce try to eat her food and engage with it in a different way that implies her seeking power, but I'm gonna let Jack talk about a point before we get to that moment.
When it comes to Bryce not eating, I just have to ask myself, like, how much of it is it a self-punishment? How much of Bryce not eating the cereal is just her own shame? Like, I know, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with her, you know, feeling so sick that she can't even eat anything. But, you know, there comes a point where Hunt tells her, I'm sorry. He's just being sympathetic to her. And it immediately talks about her saying, like, and she just stares at her food. So she can't even handle Hunt's sympathy at mm-hmm. this point. When it comes to Sabine and the wolves, her self-worth plummets every single time. And we saw that last chapter. We saw that with how Bryce was with the pack of wolves when she went to the den. And we see it here as Bryce reflects on her experience with the wolves. And Bryce talks a little bit about what happened after Connor's death. And Amy's going to get more into the song, but I want to make it very clear. Bryce was slut-shamed for sleeping with someone who wasn't Connor. At its core, it's focused around Bryce's own sexual experience because, again, she wasn't with Connor. And it's like that ownership of, like, it's okay if you were having sex so long as you're having sex with the right person. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing where it's like, they're not even being like, oh, you're supposed to be pure forever. It's like, well, you can fuck someone in the bathroom, but it better be our guy.
Right.
And that's what they are attacking her for, is for not sleeping with Connor that night. Someone who was not her boyfriend. And again, she did not know he was being murdered.
And he wasn't even her boyfriend.
He wasn't even her boyfriend. She just agreed to maybe, it was like a trial run date too.
Yeah, it was a date before the date.
Yeah. Like,
it was a pre-date.
It was a pre-date. It was a hang. It was a hang.
Yeah.
It comes down to women's sexual desire and them acting upon sexual desire to be something that is feared, something that is to be shamed. And that is Bryce's experience. I mean, it's just like the constant question I always have. Like, why is that always the first and easiest thing to shame when it comes to women? Like, I don't get it. Recently this week, people can get a sense of when this was filmed. Drake, there was a video leaked of him, and he's spread eagle, like on a bed. He still has a shirt on, and he's just handling his own dick. He's not even, he's like at half mass, but that thing is, it's a pipe. Like, he is, he thick. Anyway, no one was shaming him, really. Like, there were some jokes about, like, you know, like, wow, you're handling it and you're not even, like, fully hard. But at the same time, even not fully hard, it was intimidating. Mm. You hear, here it is, where it's like not a sex video, but, like, you know, it's still, you know, sexually related video that gets leaked. And he's not shamed for that at all.
Right. Where's a female celebrity basically was filmed her underwear off.
Yeah. Think about Jennifer Lawrence. Remember when those big leaks all happened?
Yeah.
And people were so horrified. And it's like, you're upset that she took photos for her boyfriend? Like,
right.
And people will shame women. And it just, I hate the song just for the lack of creativity. And this isn't an insult to SJM. This is an insult to the wolves of that. It's called, I just hooked up with someone in the bathroom. Don't tell Connor about it. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what pace style that's in. I would like a 4-part harmony, please.
And sounds like a drinking song to me.
Truly. So before we get into the next part, I am going to just say trigger warning for the topics of suicide in the next section.
At this point, mind you, this is all over breakfast, all over cereal, right? Yeah. Bryce is still not eating her cereal. Hunt is eating his. Bryce tells Hunt about her experience with this song that the wolves made about her as a way to taunt her. And it got so bad, they were printing the lyrics, posting them everywhere. It got to a point where Bryce, one night during that first winter after Danica's death, she contemplated ending her life. And it's at this point that Bryce thinks about her gratitude towards Juniper for looking after her, for intervening, and not in an obvious way, like staging an intervention, mm-hmm. but just being like, hey, how are you doing? Let's have a phone call. I suddenly show up. Let's watch movies.
Yeah.
Like, very, very tame and not intentionally calling attention to anything, but being mm-hmm. there as a friend. And Bryce is really grateful for that moment. Because it reminds Bryce that others like Hunt, who she's sitting next to, have had it worse than her. But that doesn't diminish her experience.
Yeah.
She still was sad. She still did contemplate ending her life.
Mm-hmm.
And she's allowed to have that experience. And in acknowledging this, Bryce then, quote, made herself take a bite of her now soggy cereal, made herself ask something, anything to clear her head a bit. And what I like about this is that Bryce finds strength in Hunt, mm-hmm. in this idea that Hunt has really survived something hard, and I can too.
Yeah.
Like, Hunt is here, he's eating his cereal, I can do it too.
If Hunt can eat his cereal after 200 years of being a slave,
I can eat my cereal too.
Yep.
And I don't say that in a way at all to mock the scene. I think it's actually very, very well done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sometimes
subtle. That's what we need, though. Like, right. Sometimes we need people's strength to inspire our own strength.
Yep, I agree. And Bryce ultimately is choosing to not spiral. She could spiral if she wanted to right now. But she's finding strength in Hunt. She's reflecting on her experience and choosing to move forward, and good for her, because I hate soggy cereal.
Okay. I hate soggy cereal, but if it's Cinnamon Toast Crunch and then the cinnamon turns the milk into cinnamon milk,
then I drink the milk and I leave the cereal.
Yeah, but at least you have something. Bryce never says the actual word suicide, and she doesn't directly say, I was going to jump.
Mm-hmm.
It's hinted. It's talked around, and it's also like the same way that Juniper never directly discusses it with
mm-hmm.
Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
It's not discussed with the reader. It's meant for us to infer, put the pieces together. I know it's not a huge leap, but we know what's happening there. And I think it's very humanizing of a character who is so strong. Bryce is probably one of the strongest, most powerful characters that we've talked about. I mean, we've only talked about ACOTAR in this, but, you know, like, she's a great character. And then to have someone that, like, we admire have gone through such a mm-hmm. hard time and talks about it.
Yeah.
This isn't the first thing she tells Hunt about, but she also doesn't talk about it in a way that she's ashamed of it.
Yeah. I think it is so important that she does not feel shame.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is meant to be a little surprising, but it's also not surprising. I'm trying to remember the first time I read it and what were my initial impressions. So one of my general questions is that, you know, can we see this moment in Bryce's past in her character throughout? Like, leading up to this point, does it make sense that she's gone through this? Or do you feel like this is something SJM threw in?
I don't feel like it's out of character. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the book, Hunt specifically asks if Bryce and Danica were lovers because friends don't love each other that way.
Yeah.
And to me, I remember the first time I read this, and it just made me so profoundly sad
mm-hmm.
to know that Bryce was that sad.
Yeah.
To have felt the loss so deeply
mm-hmm.
that became a choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of something that Bryce said earlier when Hunt said something like, you survived that night. And she says, I didn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings me, you know, it's like, oh, yes, this actually makes total sense.
Yeah.
That Bryce is a survivor in her own way of this horrible depression
yeah.
and these thoughts that could have led her into making a choice that would have hurt. Obviously her, but everyone else around her.
Yeah, and it's part of the reason why this time jump was 22 months.
Yep.
And not 6 months.
Yep.
Because she went through a period where she would not have been able to rise to the occasion.
Yep.
To work with Hunt, to search for the Crystallos demon.
Yeah.
Right? That 22 months was intentional for a lot of reasons, and Bryce going through that dark time mm-hmm. Was part of it.
Yeah. And I know we have a lot of listeners who've gone through similar experiences, and I always applaud people who go like fight through it
mm-hmm.
and who experience such a point in their life
mm-hmm.
and to make the choice not to, and who make the choice to continue.
Yeah.
pushing through. Like, it's a lot of respect goes to Bryce and to, you know, I just want to give a shout out to anyone who's been in this situation.
Yeah. I mean, I've gone through it once in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have enough distance that I look back on that time and I'm like, wow, I don't know who that person is.
Yeah.
Which is a very fortunate place to be.
Uh-huh.
And it reminds me of last week's Bryce-ism of sometimes you just got to get through
mm-hmm.
to get to the other side
yeah.
and to get away from it.
Yep.
But that's easier said than done.
It's easier said than done. And, you know, we don't always get that 22-month montage flash right, forward. Right. But, you know, time adds up. Hunt offers a bit more of himself in Bryce's vulnerable state by saying, quote, "I know I didn't act like it at first, Quinlan, but I'm glad you got put on this case. You've been really great." She tucked away what his praise did to her heart, how it lifted the fog that had settled on her. Hunt sees that Bryce is low, and he helps her by being vulnerable himself. And this is twice now that Hunt has been the vulnerable one mm-hmm. of saying, being with you makes me feel like X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
I think that he sees how much she needs this because what she just opened up to him about yeah. what horrible experience she went through. And she doesn't tell him about that night with Juniper. But, you know, I don't doubt that Hunt can kind of
feel it.
Feel that.
Mm.
And, you know, also, it just comes back down to, you know, it's a praise kink. <It's> a Not to make light of, no, to make light of the situation. It's, you know, just the, like, her saying, like, she tucked what that praise did.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Real fast. So my sister, Danielle, was visiting. And she said something about, like, you know, me being a people pleaser. And I was like, I don't think I'm a people pleaser. Like, I have a praise kink that's a different. I have a praise kink and I have fear of authority. There's, get that right. Also, one of her friends listens to us.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. She went to follow us on Instagram and saw that one of her friends follows us. So shout out to the person who's friends with my sister.
Good for you.
Me?
I don't know who.
Who are you saying good for?
I don't know. I don't know how to react. I'm confused.
Amy's just shut down. I feel like you just found out people listen to us.
I've been in denial this entire time.
You kind of look a little shocked. Like, wait, someone listens to the podcast?
And like, but it's someone your sister knows who your sister did not introduce.
Yeah.
To the podcast, like.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I was like, did you ask her about it? She was like, we're getting drinks next month. I'm like, I can't wait for that.
I can't wait for that.
This episode might come out before.
Yeah, maybe.
Before then.
Maybe.
So if you're friends with Danielle, let me know.
At some point in their discussion, Bryce reveals that she literally had to go to the mat with her father, Randall, to be allowed to move to Lunathian. And Hunt is impressed. But I also want to ask, like, how powerful is Bryce?
Yeah.
If even Hunt has heard war stories about Randall and respects him.
Yeah.
And then Bryce learned from Randall and pinned him in order to prove herself. Like, that's saying something.
Oh, absolutely.
Randall does not strike me as the kind of man to hold back.
It's funny because we have a friend named Randall.
I know. It confuses me every time.
And I'm always like, I get it. This is the giggly episode. It's a Friday night, guys.
And Jack has had a headache all night.
And I'm feeling better. I had my first caffeine in like 5 days.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely
I'm getting
better.
That high.
You know, it is. I always love the concept of like, you can go ahead and do this. You just have to prove it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it also shows that he's not telling Bryce, you're not strong enough. It's almost like, did you remember everything I taught you?
Yeah.
I've given you the tools to take me down.
Mm-hmm.
That's just sweet.
Yeah, yeah. And I appreciate parents who do that. Of it's not now, right now.
Yeah.
If you truly care enough about this, mm-hmm. you'll show me that you can be responsible.
Yeah. And he's given her all the tools.
Yeah. Hunt at one point feels guilty about how Bryce has been treated throughout her life. and the impact that it's had on her. And having read Flame and Shadow now, I just want to acknowledge that SJM begins very, very early in this book to show how Hunt truly begins to care about Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
And how he cares about how Bryce feels and his need to protect her. It happens. It's like halfway through this book and we still have 2.5 books to go.
Yeah.
And throughout, we're going to see how dedicated Hunt is to Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
But it develops early. It develops early here, mm-hmm, rather than partway through book two.
Yeah. And I think the dynamic that we have here carries through as well. Hunt's committed to Bryce. Bryce isn't committed to Hunt. Not in a way of loyalty or anything. Bryce is committed to her own plotting.
So in my mind, Bryce is willing to face bad shit,
mm-hmm,
to achieve what she wants to achieve.
Yeah.
Hunt,
yes,
is not willing to let Bryce face bad shit.
Yes. Hunt would much rather be like, let's stay in our safe little bubble, even if our safe little bubble isn't a safe little bubble.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you stay in the safe bubble,
mm-hmm,
and I'll go take care of it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. Bryce is willing to get her hands dirty, yes, when Hunt would rather keep her from it.
They have two different, very distinct love styles.
Yeah, they do.
Which I love, where I feel like they're not that like romantic characters get blurred into one another, but I feel like they always kind of end up having like these really similar traits, or they take on to be like the other. And like you said, Bryce's get down and dirty. And that's what I mean. Like she's not committed to him in the sense of like, let me protect you. She's like, let's run head first into this.
Well, it's, and
that doesn't change.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's more accurate to real relationships in that their giving and receiving of love, their love language,
mm-hmm,
isn't perfectly aligned.
Yeah. And you see the hiccups in that, especially, I don't think this is a spoiler for book two, but I feel like you see that a lot in book two.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And it definitely becomes a thing in book three.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I like it because
it's real.
It's real. And other couples in other SJM books have gotten away with shit too easily.
So easily. And it's funny because I think Bryce is the one who gets away with shit.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
But I think it's because Hunt just loves her so much.
And he's like mad about it. Like, damn it.
Yeah. He does say at one point that he's like, although their arguing was as good as foreplay or something.
Yeah.
To that effect. Like, yeah. I was like, well, yeah.
It's like, do I want foreplay or do I want to argue with you? Yeah. I don't know. I'm like, I have an answer. I know which one I want.
Yeah.
I don't think that's much of an option here.
Yeah, it's not.
Arguing, obviously. In case my mother's listening. I want to shift a little bit back to the wolves and more insight to how they work. And just more insight to why they suck.
Hmm.
You know, Team Edward. No Team Jacob Wolves here. So I'm going to read this quote. But
No Team Jacob Girls or Team Jacob Wolves? Because you said no Team Jacob Wolves.
Yeah, wolves. Yeah, like as in wolves. Like we don't know. In case no one understood when I said Team Edward. Because apparently the youths don't watch Twilight anymore.
Oh my God. Well, they also don't get the marketing.
Team Jacob versus Team Edward. Yeah. You guys don't even understand what it was like around then.
Well, and I love that SJM made a team this, team that.
Yeah.
In
Flame, I was going to order us some.
Oh, I love it. Okay, you go back to your thing.
Just wanted people to know. Twilight. Quote, but Danica's boat headed straight for the mist-shrouded island, across the river, her underking deeming her worth, and more than one person had heaved a heavy sigh. The audio from the apartment's building shitty hall camera of Danica begging for mercy had leaked the day before, as if the idea of Danica begging for her life is directly linked to her worth of getting across this river. Like,
apparently being afraid of death makes you unworthy of the afterlife.
Afraid of a gruesome death, too. Like, right. not even like a chill one, just like a horrible, traumatic one. And yeah, it just kind of made me think of like, God, like, fuck you, wolves.
Seriously. And I've always wondered, like, her begging, what if it was as she was. Because wasn't she...
She rips them apart, right, and then exactly. rips herself apart.
Exactly. So yeah. What if her begging is as she's killing her friends?
Yeah. She's like, she's definitely begging to like stop, kill her friends. And because she gets injected with all the synth. Right. And then he's like, go to town. And like, and then I was like really imagining this today. Like, you're ripping yourself apart as well.
Ugh.
What? And then I don't know if I couldn't... I was trying to find this... in the back, and I can't tell if this is like me being a genius or it's written somewhere and I just couldn't find it. But do we know if Micah was the one who was behind all the leaks? Because it feels like it also gets additional attention off of him. The leaks behind Bryce's emails, the leaks behind the text messages, the leaks of the, like, there were just a shit ton of leaks that happened. And I was like, did Micah confess to that? Because if he didn't, I am convinced he did it.
Could have been. I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest.
He brought in the doggy demon. You call it a dog later. He brought in the Crystallis.
Oh, do I call it a dog later? I don't remember.
I defend you saying, yes, call it a dog. We'll get to those notes. But he brings the demon in to get the pressure off of him.
Right.
So it just would make sense that he's trying to get more and more off of him.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
He is so clever. With his conniving.
But I'm more clever because I caught it. Or she wrote it somewhere and I remembered it.
So Hunt is the one who's reminiscing about the sailing of Danica because he was the one who was there. Bryce was not. And in doing so, Hunt realizes just how good of a friend Bryce continues to be because she continues to mourn Danica.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes him feel lonely because he wishes he had a friend like Bryce.
It just
it just hurts my heart because I'm like, she is your friend,
right? There's comfort in knowing that if anything happened to me, that you'd be devastated.
I would be devastated.
Everyone would be, and that makes me happy.
See, and I would be like, I don't want people to like me so much that they're sad when I'm dead.
I would like find a way to taxidermy your body.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Ew. Or just
please
like
don't.
Why are you covering your chest? Like, you're covering yourself up. Like,
I'm covering my boobs.
You're covering your boobs. Like, no, not like that's not the part of you that I'm cutting off, man.
Basically, it's, you never mind.
No. I just, you know, just carry you around with me like I do with my dad.
Oh my.
My dad is not taxidermied. I would like to make that known. I have his ashes.
See, when you talk about taxiderming me, it makes me think of Mao Zedong's dead body in a glass coffin in Tiananmen Square.
Who's?
Mao Zedong.
I don't know who that is.
The communist leader from China.
Okay, you say that as if like I wasn't raised in an American public school system.
That's fair. I'm really shocked.
You gave me the most sassy look, and I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't even know the 50 states. You think I know that? I thought New England was a state, okay?
Can you name more than 10 presidents?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Alexander Hamilton. That was done on purpose. I want people to know that. Wait, hold up. So the former communist leader is in
who brought communism to China.
He's like still in a glass coffin?
Yeah.
Up for grabs?
Yeah.
For people to go look at?
It's a fake body.
Oh, okay.
I think it's a body double. But yeah.
That they go and replace every...
It's in the public.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Do you think they replace it with a different body?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Like a wax body?
I don't know.
I like my version better.
We quickly see in chapter 45 just how lonely Bryce is as well. Like Hunt, Bryce is beginning to feel like she doesn't actually have any friends because Juniper is always busy with practice and practice and practice and shows, and Fury never calls, never answers calls, never texts. And it just is sad that these two, after they've built this connection with one another, continue to feel sad, which is totally, I understand. Mm-hmm. I have felt that. Mm-hmm. And you can't stop that from happening.
Yeah.
But it breaks my heart for them that they're so closely bound together now, mm-hmm. and yet still feel so distant from each other.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that during the phone call with Bryce and Juniper, we get another Food is Power moment. And I think it's really, really well done. And I never even thought about it until I was analyzing it.
Yep.
So as Bryce is talking to Juniper, she's pulling out leftovers from the fridge. And she's like, oh, none of it's really a full meal. I'll just graze. Mm-hmm. But all of it is basically spoiled. The stew is spoiled.
Yeah.
And she tries to eat carrots with hummus, but the carrots are slimy.
It's so visceral, that slimy carrot. Mm-hmm. When I was like, oh, I'm there with you. I get it. And, you know, SJM, who in ACOTAR is the queen of food as power, using food as metaphor, we have not seen that at all here. And then finally she busts it out. I'm just like, thank God, this is what you're good at. I mean, she's great at everything. But it's such a strong moment.
It is a very strong moment. And it's subtle.
Yeah.
She does it very, very well, because here are the things that should be giving Bryce strength, aka her friend Juniper. Mm-hmm. But instead, it feels spoiled because Juniper's priorities are on herself, which she is allowed to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But Bryce is left hanging.
Yeah.
Just like she's left hanging with this food. Like, she can't eat any of this.
Yeah.
And she quickly gives up because, no, don't get food poisoning. But also, she feels so much loneliness and mm-hmm. self-pity that she just can't finish eating, even if she wanted to.
I just rinse off the carrot.
Nope. Nope, nope, nope,
nope. And I go, that's fine.
If I think the food could be in perfect condition, but if I think it's been sitting there too long, I will throw it away.
You know I'm convinced I can build a tolerance to salmonella.
Yep. And this is why I've never had food poisoning.
Yeah.
I'd rather waste food.
Yeah. Choy, choy, choy.
Choy, choy, choy.
It's never too late.
It's at this point we shift scenes, and Hunt is trying to bond with the Triari. And I'm really proud of him for going out mm-hmm. and being with the Triari. He's drinking a beer with them. But it does make me sad that it's taken him 200 years to get to this point. We learn in this process that the group, the Triari, who does go out regularly with one another, prefer the dive bar at the ground level instead of the sky-high lounges all other angels go to. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice little detail that symbolizes how these members of the Triari are more down to earth.
Also, they're the fallen.
They're the fallen.
So they're...
Naomi is not fallen, but she's also not with them right now.
Yep.
It's Victoria, who is fallen.
Isaiah.
And Justinian.
The fallen.
The fallen. They are literally on the ground, mm-hmm. while all the other angels are high above. Mm-hmm. To me, it also reminds us of where their loyalties lie.
Yeah.
They're not elitists like other angels. Mm-hmm. They're okay that they're at the ground level.
Yeah. Also, I would prefer a dive bar over a rooftop bar any day.
Oh, yeah. 100.
I prefer a bar that I can walk in with leggings and a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
And be like, I'm still hot.
Yep.
Being turned away at the door because I didn't wash my hair today.
Or like the time I went in my PJs.
And I wore my Twilight shirt.
Yep, yes. That's right.
One of the saddest lines in this, I've decided, in this whole book, this is the saddest line. I found it. Quote, they might all be slaves, but he could pay for his own damn drink. That's when Isaiah and Victoria and Justinian were like, oh, we'll get your drink. And Hunt's like,
fuck you.
I can get my own drink. And it's like, oh boy, you can barely get your baseball cap, babe.
Yeah.
Like, that's,
yeah.
It made me real sad.
Yeah.
Hunt finds Bryce after she runs off. So Bryce was like, hey, I'm choosing violence today. And she was saying, Naomi can follow me. Knowing that Hunt was going to come right after her. And like, they both knew it.
Yeah.
It's just so like, okay, you better stay here. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going to pay attention to me now?
And it makes sense because they're both lonely. Mm-hmm. Even though Bryce has her friends He's got his Triari. They're lonely.
Yeah. I mean, she still couldn't let him have a single evening.
Nope.
Yeah. She's lonely, so come look at me. But at the same time, like, sexual tension.
Yeah.
We'll
eat it up.
I'll eat it up. I allow it. So Hunt finds Bryce after she runs off, and Bryce is not okay. And in order to distract herself, because she's in a very vulnerable place, she asks Hunt if he's ever hooked up with Naomi. And the answer is no, although apparently Naomi suggested it.
I know.
I was like, ooh. Oh.
And apparently she heard he bangs too.
Right? But I also like that he didn't tell Bryce, like, no, but she wanted to.
Yeah.
Right? But Bryce, I want to say, is the one who brought up sex, because she finds comfort in Hunt, and this is a dynamic that she's comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she's using sex necessarily as a tool of shutting out emotions. I think what she might have done in the past, you know, hooking up with in the bathroom or something, you know, like she might have used sex before in the past. But I think whenever Bryce brings up sex with Hunt or flirts or skirts around that line, it's a way of centering herself to be vulnerable to him. Because, again, Bryce isn't the one who's saying, hey, Hunt, I'm having a really fun time with you. Hey, Hunt, I'm really happy that you and I got partnered in this. Instead, Bryce is the one that's saying, like, hey, what other sexy things have happened? So, you know, this is the comfort she needs from him.
Can I argue that point from a different perspective?
That she is using sex to avoid emotions?
No. I actually think that she uses sex to find comfort. And the reason why... So, hear me out. And maybe this is all trash and we cut it.
Wait, just clarify though. Sex with Hunt or sex in general?
Sex in general.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go back to the line shifter at the start of the book.
I'm going to say at the start, after the 22 months, because that's who I was referencing.
Yes. Okay. Right before she goes sees and meets Tershin.
Yeah.
I think in that moment she was using sex because, if I compare it to now, to this moment with Hunt, to seek comfort in a place where she was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why she hasn't sought sex with Hunt, even though she obviously is into him, obviously is feeling frisky, is because she's willing to be vulnerable with him and willing to be in an uncomfortable situation with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because that has built emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
And that is not something she has had for a long time.
Yeah.
And the use of sex here is maybe because, A, she is into him, but she's not willing to admit she's lonely right now.
Mm-hmm.
She's not willing to share that vulnerability right now.
Yeah.
And so the sex is a different way of finding comfort in their dynamic.
Love the different perspective. You know, I mean, then that's like literature, right? I'm basing it off of the original argument I made when we first covered it, where she was using sex at that point to almost like reenact that night.
Yeah.
And punishing herself to relive that whole scenario.
Yep.
So if you were to take it your approach, absolutely makes sense. If you were to take it in my approach,
also makes sense.
Yeah. The joy of literature. So yeah. I hope people enjoyed that. That's how, like, you take one thing and interpret it two different ways. In order to keep this sexy comfort alive, Bryce accuses Hunt of wanting to yell at her. And Hunt says, quote, "Would you like me to yell, Bryce Quinlan?" Her throat bobbed. "Maybe." Hunt let out a low laugh, didn't try to stop the heat that flooded him. "That can be arranged." The blush that bloomed over her freckled cheeks, inviting him to taste every rosy inch. Whew.
Just gets so hot.
Yeah. And nothing's happening.
I know. I almost wanted to suggest that the question for this episode be, is there a correlation between truth and sexual tension in this book? That as more truth is revealed, there is more sexual tension and frustration between the two of them.
Then I would say the more truth that's revealed, the less foundation Bryce has. And the foundation that she can have is this newfound
relationship.
Relationship.
Yeah. Which is not a bad thing.
Goes round and round. No, it's a great thing.
We enjoy it.
We enjoy it. I could use more of it in my life. Not gonna lie.
Yep. And then the Crystallis demon attacks.
Such a cock block.
I was trying to cough, but the laugh took over.
I would just like turn over and be like, bro, you couldn't give me a minute.
I needed at least 5 more minutes.
Seriously. Stupid dog.
So I don't know why I always imagine the Crystallis demon like a dog, but it's apparently big enough that it runs into Hunt, quote, with the force of an SUV.
Okay, force doesn't mean size. It just says force. Let's imagine a Dachshund.
He could not run into me with the force of an SUV.
You don't know how fast this dog can run.
I'm going to imagine a dog like Charlie, Tamara's Charlie.
All right, so a Great Dane. I'm willing to negotiate with
you on
this.
He's a Great Mastiff.
All right, that one.
It's a big dog.
I am willing to negotiate. So long as we both agree dog, I'm willing to accept big dog.
165-pound dog, yeah.
It's like a dog that's still skinnier than me.
Well, at the time, I was the same size as him. Oh. And now I'm much heavier than him. When the Crystallis attacks, Hunt chooses to protect Bryce over pulling a weapon. And this is one of those instances where I was like, Bryce would have pulled the weapon instead of protecting you, sir. Now, granted, this is from Bryce's point of view, so that's her assessment. Which, knowing that Randall trained her, and she had to prove her training to him, and we've seen her in the gun range, we can now trust that she's capable of making that assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if this had happened at the beginning of the novel, we wouldn't know to trust her assessment.
Right.
That Hunt had time to pull a gun. I just want to point that out. And to me, what it does is it reinforces how well Bryce is trained. At first, during this attack, Bryce freezes when Hunt is pinned by the demon and they begin to fight. And for me, this indicates PTSD. She's imagining right now that this is Danica being, because she doesn't know anything about Danica's real
death. Yeah.
So she's imagining that this is what happened to Danica, that the Crystallis demon came out of nowhere, attacked her. And it's only when the memory of Danica comes up that Bryce finally moves and into action. Between Bryce and Hunt, they manage to overkill the demon. Just to make sure it's dead. It's just like, it was almost for fun.
Yeah.
Like, just, let's just keep going.
I respect it. During any kind of scary movie, I'm like, nope, I need more stabbing.
Yeah. I don't blame them, to be honest, because they really don't know anything about the demon or they don't know enough about the demon right now. And I do appreciate the moment where they skewer the heart.
Yeah.
With a knife. I can't remember what it was, but skewer has a food connotation. The Crystallis, the Crystallis demon is now basically prey.
Yeah.
They've killed it. And the food association just kind of drives that home for me.
Two moments during this attack, and you kind of touched on one of them, where Hunt had a moment to choose between pulling out his weapon and protecting Bryce, and he chose Bryce. And it's the same way that Bryce has a moment to choose for calling for help or protecting Hunt, and she chose Hunt. It's just sweet, you know. Like they both had an opportunity to choose otherwise, and they didn't.
They chose each other,
and I think that was done very much on purpose.
Yeah,
by SJM.
I agree. As the fight is taking place, we learn that the Crystallis' venom nullifies power, which explains a lot and will be important later on. The Medi-Witch, who happens to be Hypaxia, shows up to treat Hunt because his powers have been nullified. And it's curious to me that at this point, when Hypaxia offers to take a look, or when Naomi suggests that Bryce should be looked at by Hypaxia, Bryce is like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why.
I always figured it was because she wanted Hunt looked at first.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But Naomi, I think, implies after Hunt is done being treated. And I don't know if I just misread that, or I guess I've always wondered if Bryce this was just another way for Bryce to punish herself. Like, did she distract Hunt enough to put them in this situation and to not be looked at by the Meta Witch is a punishment in itself?
I can see that. I can see that because, I mean, Hunt gets chewed up.
He gets chewed up.
Pretty darn well in here.
And she is really shaken by that, which we'll talk about in a little bit. I did notice that SJM really focuses in on Naomi's inky hair and onyx eyes. Now, as we just mentioned earlier, Naomi is not fallen, but her black hair and dark eyes remind me of Hunt, which are features that Bryce focuses on with him. And I want to suggest that maybe the similarity between Naomi and Hunt is deliberate, because they almost come across as siblings, even though Naomi just, we learned, propositioned Hunt.
Siblings that want to fuck?
Well, you know.
Just like Rune and Bryce.
I wonder if by making them seem similar, it makes us trust Naomi more. It was just something I want. You try to usually change up everybody's features, so everyone's a little distinct.
Yep.
But these two seemed too similar to me.
That's fair.
And I wondered if there was an intention behind that.
I think whenever we have a love interest and we introduce a new male or a new female, there's automatically, as a reader, we're like, all right, well, who's this person?
Yeah.
How are they going to mess things up before the people that I'm rooting for?
Yeah.
And I think it's just like ways to... that the author, SJM, is letting us know, nope, not a threat. We don't have to worry about her. Not every woman is going to be competition.
Yeah. Fair. That's a good point.
Thank you.
Micah then shows up and struts his stuff, trying to act important. His, quote, wings seem to glow with power. But despite having power, he also doesn't want the press to catch wind of what's taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's him exerting his power, but somehow that makes me view him as having less power by trying to keep it secret from the press.
Yeah, I feel like this is him panicking a little bit.
I think so.
It feels a little panicky. I think that he wasn't prepared for Hunt and Bryce to be there, because at this point we don't know, but we find out later in the book, Micah has released the Crystallis to find the horn.
Right.
And it's led them here. And that's why he wants to know who killed it. Who did the Crystallis attack first?
Right.
You know, those are the things that he's trying to find out. And I feel like it's him not being in control of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
The Crystallis is dead.
Mm-hmm.
The whole ox is here now.
Yeah.
And he can't cover his tracks like he normally would, which is why I think that he burns the body immediately and tells us, like, we don't want the press to hear about this.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, it screams illusion of power.
Mm-hmm.
He comes across as powerful. Everyone's like nervous because he's there.
Yeah.
But really, he's the one who's panicking.
He's truly panicking. And he has a whole investigation unit here and he needs to be like, I mean, someone even says in the book, we weren't done with that yet. Still need to work on this, please, sir. Shut up, man. You're going to get fired. All right.
I just needed to tag it for evidence, but...
My hand was still on it. You kind of burned me, sir. Can someone send the Mad Witch? Shut up. I just don't think he saw me next to the Crystallis demon.
I get farted.
Do it. It happened.
Oh, man. We are slap happy.
I know.
Okay.
All right. So Bryce steps up for Hunt when Micah asks, like, hey, who killed this demon? And Hunt gives Bryce joint credit here. He's like, no, we killed the demon. And I personally feel like Bryce is trying to give Hunt all the credit, because she already said that she's worried about Micah coming in and saying, you know, you're in trouble. What did you do wrong? So she's trying to help Hunt so that he doesn't get more
bodies so that his deal doesn't go away with Micah. And it's probably a good thing.
Well, I think the other thought that I had in this moment was, yes, she wants to give Hunt all the credit because mm-hmm. he needs to remain in good standing with Micah. At the same time, Micah needs to continue to underestimate Bryce.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a protection for her that she has held
close
to her chest for a really long time.
And she can't have people know that she's powerful.
Right. And it's really, really important for her survival at the end of the novel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Micah has to assume she is weak.
Yeah, I love that.
For her to be successful.
I love it. Thank you for listening to part one of this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Tune in Thursday for part two, where we finish covering this week's chapters.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo.
Bye.